Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Hi, it's Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is a special podcast-only episode of the show, and I'm here with one of the people whom I most want to be like when I grow up, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. Hello there, Jack.
Hi, Meghna.
Okay. Well, professional affections aside, of which I have a lot for you, but we'll put those aside for a moment because we are here to talk about President Joe Biden's State of the Union address that he gave last night, and here's how the president kicked it off.
Last year, COVID-19 kept us apart. This year, we're finally together again. Tonight, we meet as Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, but most importantly, as Americans.
Now, unity, of course, has always been a very driving theme for Biden, and he bookended his State of the Union address with that message.
So on this night, on our 245th year as a nation, I've come to report on the state of the nation, the State of the Union. And my report is this: the State of the Union is strong because you, the American people, are strong. We are stronger today. We are stronger today than we were a year ago. And we'll be stronger a year from now than we are today. This is our moment to meet and overcome the challenges of our time. And we will, as one people, one America, the United States of America. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you. Go get him.
Well, Jack, it's safe to say that this isn't exactly the speech that Biden had planned to give, what, even just 2 or 3 weeks ago prior to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And we'll talk about that in a second. But overall, what did you think of his tone? Was it an effective speech?
Well, one measure is a CBS instant poll. And of course, it was a poll of mostly Democrats. They did predominate. Nevertheless, nearly 70% said the speech made them feel more optimistic. That clearly was the note of his ending that you quoted. And, you know, he began finally together again, meaning, of course, I'm together with the Republicans, presumably. And yet the signs there were not good. While he was even speaking, Ted Cruz, Marsha Blackburn, Michael McCall, the Texas congressman, were all tweeting, you know, he was weak. He was Neville Chamberlain. And then Kim Reynolds, in her, the Iowa governor, in her response, picked that up, called him weak. And there was open heckling from the two Furiosos of the Republican side, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert. And nor did this reaction from the Republicans in the room. It echoed what Republicans generally seem to think of him. According to one poll, 87% of Republican voters deeply disapprove of Mr. Biden, whereas only 78% feel that way about Putin. So together again in an election year, it was an aspiration unlikely to be realized, if to judge by the signs in that chamber and beyond in Republican hearts.
Right. I mean, the divisions, actually, to your point, Jack, were on full display. I will say that Boebert's outburst, particularly when Biden was talking about U.S. soldiers and the health effects they've had from the burn pits in various wars, and she had that outburst right when he was talking about his own son, Bo Biden. I mean, it did turn the stomach more than a little bit, because it's one thing to have policy differences. It's another thing to drag down a moment of something ostensibly that the United States should be able to rally around, the health of its own troops. Drag that down into the mud. But I think what actually surprised me even more about that moment in particular is that it came following the top of Biden's speech, which was dedicated entirely to unity around Ukraine, right? I mean, he asked the people, in Congress witnessing his speech to stand, if they could, in support of Ukraine. But in addition, the president drew a very bright line on how far that support would go.
But let me be clear. Our forces are not engaged and will not engage in the conflict with Russian forces in Ukraine. Our forces are not going to Europe to fight Ukraine, but to defend our NATO allies in the event that Putin decides to keep moving west. For that purpose, we have mobilized American ground forces, air squadrons, ship deployments to protect NATO countries, including Poland, Romania, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. And as I've made crystal clear, the United States and our allies will defend every inch of territory that is NATO territory with the full force of our collective power, every single inch.
Jack, your thoughts on what President Biden said about Ukraine?
Well, I think that last bit was very well judged. That seems to be where the public is. Strengthen NATO. Do not intervene in Ukraine. Avoid a confrontation with Russia. This is a war-weary nation, and Biden's exit from Afghanistan showed that he certainly is tired of wars, and it hurt him how rapid that was and how chaotic. But I think that's really quite well judged, that's where the public is, and there's going to be pressure almost certainly from the more hawkish Republicans to perhaps go beyond that, to somehow work to subvert Russia within Ukraine, perhaps CIA operatives. There have been some people on the Tucker Carlson show talking about that. But that's where the public is. Don't intervene in Ukraine. Avoid a face-off with Russia. Strengthen NATO. I'm sure that was disappointing for Ukrainians, but it's the right note for Americans.
This is really interesting, Jack, because, of course, Joe Biden has a long history in the Senate in foreign policy, specifically, because it seemed as if Biden spent, a third, maybe a little less than that, of the speech on Ukraine. Could he have said more? Was it a missed opportunity for Biden to further reinvigorate the idea of American diplomatic leadership? Or, given what you said about the war-weary nation, which is absolutely true, was that too much of a risk for him?
Yeah, it might have been. He certainly could have pushed the ideological conflict, spoke to that, made that sharper. You know, we don't think of an ideological conflict with Russia, the thuggist Russia, as we had with the Soviet Union. And yet there's something like that a brew now. We're in a new Cold War with a nation that believes almost in the law of the jungle in international affairs. And he could have made more of that and said, this is what autocracy does. This is the danger of it abroad, that autocrats, act independently of their public opinion. They do what they will. Weak nations suffer what they must. This is a moral question. This is the question of our time. He could have made that the conflict with Russia, larger in conceptual and ideological terms.
Oh, Jack, your way with words will never fail to make my heart race. So autocrats act independent of public opinion. Hold that thought, okay, because I'm going to come around back around to it in a few minutes. But let's move a little forward into the middle part of Biden's State of the Union, because he did pivot from Ukraine to domestic issues. And it sounded that, after a while, he settled more into the State of the Union address that he had intended on giving, two or three weeks ago before the Ukrainian crisis. So Biden, when he talked about domestic issues, tried to stay on his overall theme of unity, but he did actually get a couple of jabs in, jabs towards the GOP. And here's one of them.
And as my dad used to say, it gave the people just a little bit of breathing room. Unlike the $2 trillion tax cut passed in the previous administration that benefited the top 1% of Americans, the American Rescue Plan helped working people and left no one behind.
So, Jack, there's Joe Biden there talking about COVID relief that has come through in his administration with, of course, Congress passing it as well. Your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, that's where the unity together again audibly broke down. And yet Biden was saying something very important there. And we did a program about the Biden economic vision, which is essentially antithetical to Reagan's vision. Reagan was cosset the rich, be good to the people at the top. It'll filter down. That's not Biden's position. It's build from the middle down. And may the rich and the corporations be happy paying a little more in taxes. That's a fundamental shift in thinking about our political economy. And Biden was voicing it there. And, you know, has the Biden approach worked? Well, you know, it's striking that last year, three times as many jobs were created last year under Joe Biden than in the last three Republican presidencies combined. That's kind of amazing, but it's true. And yet the view that the Republicans are still to be trusted with the economy remains almost has an unbreakable grip on American opinion, when the facts show that consistently Democratic presidents produce more jobs. There's three times the number of jobs last year than under the last three Republican presidents combined. And yet a lot of Americans don't see that. They think unemployment is higher than it is. They think we're in a recession. There's been a real disconnect there. Biden has not brought home that his policies of especially, you know, putting money in the hands of the poorest Americans through the family tax credit, that he hasn't brought home that the prosperity, the broad-based prosperity that has created. Of course, inflation complicates that.
Well, so Jack, to me, this was actually perhaps the most interesting part of Biden's State of the Union last night. Because you're right. I mean, in part because of perhaps, let's say, ineffective Democratic messaging or messaging from his administration about the achievements they have had in the past year. But also, I think it's because of the other realities across 2021 that have been visited upon Joe Biden's presidency already. And he had to, or maybe I have to say, I'm surprised by how directly he addressed some of those realities. You mentioned inflation being a top of mind. So here's what President Biden said about getting inflation under control. And he talked about his plan to do so.
One way to fight inflation is to drive down wages and make Americans poorer. I think I have a better idea to fight inflation. Lower your costs, not your wages.
So then the president went on to talk about, you know, plans to encourage companies to reshore manufacturing. He pointed out Intel, saying they're just waiting for Congress to act and they're going to invest something like $80 billion in a new manufacturing facility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But let me ask you what you thought about Biden's insistence that increasing American manufacturing, buying American, et cetera, would lower costs and therefore temper inflation.
In the long term, I'm sure that's true. But, you know, these things take so long to work out. And he's got a punishing political clock. Polls show that inflation is the number one issue for Americans. Nothing else compares. And there's very little he can do in the short term between now and the election to mitigate inflation. He did mention some things that would obviously help. Lowering prescription drug costs would, perhaps Americans are spending more for gas, but if they, you know, were able to defray that cost with lower prescription drug prices, they might even be ahead. Similarly with aid to childcare and aid to people going to community colleges, all of these would be anti-inflationary in that they would give Americans more money to perhaps abide inflation. But again, those would take time to enact. And it was very significant that Joe Manchin, the sort of President Monquet there, was sitting on the Republican side of the aisle and showed no enthusiasm. Apparently, people watched him for any of the, you know, Biden's calls to essentially pass the individual elements of his big Build Back Better program.
Right. I mean, and Biden spent a lot of time going over those elements again in the State of the Union. That seemed a little bit odd to me because, you know, per your point about Manchin, it's dead in the water. Why do you think he spent so much time reiterating what essentially was a plan that's gone nowhere?
Well, you know, there was a line that Bill Clinton's back in one of his administrations when somebody asked him, you know, why, what are you going to, you know, you can't do much about this problem. He said, no, but we want to be caught trying. You know, presidents need to be seen to be doing something, to be thinking about something. And it is the case, he quoted from those 14 Nobel Prize winning economists, that if the Build Back Better plan in toto did pass, it would, over the long term, reduce inflationary costs, create a more productive economy. So he wasn't just, you know, making it up out of whole cloth.
Mm. So another one of the realities that perhaps is dogging the Biden administration is the ongoing COVID pandemic, of course. And again, I mean, President Biden could rightfully say, look, under my administration, we rapidly accelerated vaccine availability across the United States. We've been increasing access to masks. There are COVID treatment drugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he also has to deal with the political reality that there's a lot of fractious public opinion about out there about how his administration, especially in the latter half of 2021, has handled the pandemic. And so when he talked about COVID, he focused on the progress that he says has been made thus far.
It's time for America to get back to work and fill our great downtowns again with people. People working from home can feel safe and begin to return to their offices. We're doing that here in the federal government. The vast majority of federal workers will once again work in person. Our schools are open. Let's keep it that way. Our kids need to be in school.
So President Joe Biden, they're really trying hard to sort of shift the public conversation around where America is, where the United States is with COVID. But of course, some of the things he just talked about, particularly schools, have really, they've hit Democrats hard in the polls. We also have the CDC just recently sort of reevaluating how they're, you know, putting out COVID maps across the United States, focusing more on hospitalization rather than cases overall. Now, some people just see all of these as political moves, again, because of that punishing political clock you talked about, Jack. What do you think?
I think there was a good deal of that there. I mean, especially the bit about keeping the kids in school, that almost seemed to be addressed to the, you know, ginned up Republican attack on masks and masking and overreaction and so on. And on the came to the boil to the top in the Virginia governor's race, where the whole issue of schooling came so central. And I think he was trying to get ahead of it there. And that line got lots of bipartisan applause. So he was, in a way, there's the old phrase from Disraeli, he was dishing the Whigs. He was taking the other guy's issue and making it his own. I want to get our kids back to school, he was saying. I want to get those masks away. I want normalcy. But it's, you know, King Canute wanted the tide to go out, too. It's a precarious normalcy, isn't it? Mm. One more variant, one more surge, and all of the good trends could go the other way. He was, in a way, whistling, if not in the dark, then in the murk on that one.
It seems as if there were parts of Biden's speech where he was clearly signaling that his administration, at least, is willing to publicly say they can see the issues that Democrats may pay a heavy price for in the midterms, right? Inflation, schools, and COVID.
Yeah.
Another one is the language around policing. In fact, I mean, here's what Biden said in the State of the Union last night.
We should all agree the answer is not to defund the police. It's to fund the police. Fund them. Fund them.
So, Jack, this was quite a moment. What did you make of it?
Well, you know, he's been saying that all through the campaign. He said it all through the 2020 campaign. I am for funding the police, not defunding them. And yet the Republican canard about the Democrats wanting to defund the police has stuck, and it's hurt them. And, you know, notably, it passed without much notice, but something called the Working Families Party, which is progressive group, sponsored a response to the State of the Union by Rashida Tlaib, the Detroit congresswoman, who has in fact said no more policing. It can't be reformed. The police chief of Detroit has called her comments disgusting. So right there, you see, and on Fox News, this was given a lot of attention. It basically just happened on Facebook, her presentation. But they gave it a lot of attention to saying that's the part that stands for the Democratic haul. Don't believe Biden with this, you know, fund the police. They really want to remove the thin blue line between us and crime and chaos. So that has been a huge problem for the Democrats in the 2020 campaign for Congress, especially. And it's going to come back again.
Yeah. You know, in that section of the speech, President Biden actually packed in quite a lot. And it went by so fast that I'm not sure everyone noted that just a few paragraphs after he, you know, forcefully said, we have to fund the police, fund the police, fund the police. And then he slipped in we should also repeal the liability shield that makes gun manufacturers the only industry in America that cannot be sued. So, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of covering a lot of bases here when it comes to policing and guns in America.
Yes, yes. And he had to say that, didn't he? I mean, especially in view of the settlement with the gun manufacturers that the Sandy Hook parents have recently arrived at. And that was a gesture toward, to talk about hopeless causes, but the cause of gun control. Not likely to see any action, but very important that he gestured to it. Yeah.
So, Jack, as we wrap up here, the question that's been mulling or turning over in my mind last night and all through the day today is this. Like, you could actually sort of see Biden's speech as two speeches, right? There's the Ukraine part and the urgency of that. And then there was the domestic portion of his speech. I see them as somewhat related because Joe Biden began his speech talking about how democracies around the world need to act forcefully against dictators. And when they do not, dictators come back and cause more chaos, right? That was near the beginning of his speech. Then towards the end, I mean, at the very end of the speech, the president says, you know, I know this nation will meet the test. We will protect freedom and liberty, expand fairness and opportunity, and we will save democracy. The middle of his speech, though, all that big domestic agenda Biden has had, so much of it that he has been unsuccessful at enacting, it's because of the decrepit state of American democracy, is it not? So, I mean, it feels like that this sort of fight to protect democracy abroad has to be buttressed by a strengthening of American democracy at home. Because otherwise, as you said, autocrats act independently of public opinion. Well, public opinion here in the United States is strongly in support of the different parts of Biden's Build Back Better plan. But because of folks like Senator Manchin, the plan isn't getting anywhere.
No. And the war, this war in Ukraine, really, this attack on Ukraine, really fits into a tragic pattern. You know, near the end of his life, Walter Lippmann, the big shoe columnist, the sage for decades, he reflected on the domestic price of war. He pointed out that World War I ended the progressive era, that all reform ended and we had a carnival of reaction in the 1920s. World War II rang down the curtain on the New Deal. The Korean War ended Harry Truman's fair deal. Vietnam put paid to LBJ's Great Society. And, you know, Biden's Build Back Better was in trouble before Ukraine, but Putin's war may have snuffed out even the faint hope of social reform, and even more critically, it almost certainly ended any chance of progress on climate change. And this at a time when the report after report documents just how dire the climate situation is and how needful it is to act now and act fast. The chairman of the UN report, 3,000 pages just released the other day, has climate scientists despairing because of the lack of response to it. And some even saying, you know, we don't want to bring children into this world. And Ukraine, in the sense that it'll now put the emphasis on producing oil, not stopping, you know, limiting the supply of oil. It'll change the subject of politics to, you know, confrontation abroad. It'll distract from the challenge of our time, which is climate change. It is on that, in that sense, this Putin's war fits into that pattern of war, killing social hope, and it is a sort of blight on the future of the planet.
Yeah, I mean, so the global impact, absolutely clear, and I just kept wondering, you know, how much weight can an American president's rhetoric about standing up for democracy, how much weight can it carry globally when, again, it feels as if our very own democracy here at home continues to crumble day by day?
Yes, and his sort of bootless, almost aside about we need to act on the John Lewis voting bill and the other bill to, you know, combat the Republican attack on democracy across the country. That was almost just thrown in there. And of course, there again, we have two senators, Manchin and Sinema, blocking any progress toward defending democracy when it has never in this country, at least not since Reconstruction, the reaction to Reconstruction, been under such threat. And you're right. It's the same battle here at home to defend democracy abroad and to defend it at home. But any question of unity in the speech would have been lost if he had essentially named names about what the Republicans are trying to do to a democracy here at home. That would have cost, there would have been boos. So he avoided it.
Even more than we heard last night. Well, Jack Beatty, yes. On Point news analyst, it is always such a pleasure to journey through history and the present with you. Thank you so much for being with me right now.
Thank you, Meghna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.